I will call the meeting to order. May 7th, starting a new chapter here, new committee. I believe that what it'll be, our next meeting will have new youth and jobs. So we have a couple of little items. There's one odd one. I guess they want us to have a second vice chairman now. And so we have to do that. We have a couple new supervisors. Supervisor Uhas and Supervisor Nordigan. John, you've been on this committee?
Yep, 2 years ago.
So I just have a couple items. The committee naturally is very busy. You have facilities has been added in the past few years to this. It used to just be public works. So now what this committee entails is every public project, basically, every building project, all the maintenance of all the buildings, all the roof projects, new buildings, whether it be things we've just finished, like $21 million project at Brookside Storage Center out at the detention center, the second floor at the public safety building, which moved across the street. We've been buying buildings and properties near the campus, the downtown campus, and it's worked out quite well for us. So there's ongoing construction. We also are redoing courtrooms one at a time, major projects there, renovations. We are on a roof rebuilding project that began with this building and is now expanding out this year. These are roofs that the county owns in the hundreds that we've prioritized and are working on. So besides all the public buildings this committee is in charge of, we have the public works with the highway department. That's what most people think of when they think of public works. So, and now we are into some major construction. One of the largest, or the largest project we will have ever undertaken when we do S, which is 142 out of the freeway. We're in the middle of this Foxconn thing. So we also are going to be working on multiple projects related to that. The golf courses, all the parks. So it's actually, since I've been on the county board, it's the busiest committee I've ever been on as far as the length of time, one thing that it takes, and the amount of work that goes through it. And as I said, it's every project that the county's doing goes through this committee. So when you have questions, Supervisor Uhas, Nordigan, that you haven't been here, the key people, naturally, the first key person is Ray. I know, Mark, you had some questions the other night at the county board, so you could have had those answers quicker or had them already. So what you want to do in a situation like that is, if it's Ray, if it's Clement, feel free, because that'll get it done for you faster. If it's anything to do with facilities, Ray is still the main person. He'll delegate that out, because everybody's pretty busy too, so Ray will know who to go to. What we need to do, though, apparently tonight, is we've got a chair and a vice chair. We need to elect a second vice chair. The vice chair is John, correct?
Correct.
First vice chair.
So, do we have any volunteers or does anyone want to nominate someone to be the...
Move John Bull, since he's been here before.
Second. We have a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in, any discussion? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so that is our second vice chair. Next, we have the approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. If everyone received those, I guess some of you weren't here for that. But do I have a motion or a discussion on that? I guess that would have to come from.
No, it can come from anybody.
I wasn't here.
Okay.
At least you two.
Okay.
It still can come from anybody on the board according to the.
Right.
Oh, right. So, I move we approve the minutes.
Do we have a second?
April 2nd meeting.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Frankel. All those in favor?
Aye.
Citizens' comments. I see those citizens here. They would have 5 minutes to speak if anyone would like to. In fact, we'll move on. And we're going to move on to the golf division first. What we do here as a committee is we vary this so that every once in a while some of these guys get to go home.
Because we're hungry.
Good evening, I'm Dan Dreyer. I'm the general manager for the Division of Golf at Crichtondale Links in Petrifying Springs. Welcome to our new members. I just have a compliance maintenance report that I would like to start with. It's for our wastewater treatment plant. We have a plant that operates out at Brightondale for the clubhouse, the maintenance shop, and for the park out there. We have 4 ball diamonds at the park and a pavilion. So we, instead of boring you with this 22-page report, we can just turn to the last page. You should have got it in your packet. And it does state that all of our grades for last year were A's. So we have a 4.0 grade point average, which means that we have passed this compliance and maintenance annual report. We were having some issues with some of the pumps, and we have replaced those this spring with submersible pumps, so we're looking in good shape at the wastewater treatment plant. So this is a kind of an FYI report, and wanted just to bring that up for everybody. And then
Mr. Chairman, I know everybody, but I don't know if everybody has met everybody.
Yeah, I was just going to do that. I just kind of assumed there because it's such a small little group.
Yeah.
But possibly they don't. So Dan just did that, so maybe we'll start there with Mike.
Sure.
Go around.
Yeah, Mike Schrant, Facilities Manager.
Wendy Epping, Administrative Support.
Ray Arby, Public Works Director.
Frank Martinelli, Engineering Project Manager for Facilities.
Matt Collins, Director of Parks.
Chris Walton, Fiscal Manager.
Monica Uhas, District 18.
Joe Wimble, District 17.
Dennis Alderman, District 23.
John Franco, District 13.
Mark Nordian, 21.
John Poole, District 20.
It's coming to Bloomberg, Director of Highways.
There we go.
And the report that I've included for Golf Division, we're following our 2018 business plan. We're sending out an email blast to over 12,000. We're working with Golf Now. This is a weekly email blast that we put together. We're working with Golf Now. We have combed and looked through all of our email data, and we found that our blast capabilities is up to almost 20,000 now. So I'm very excited about that. They're also working with our branding and our social media. So we're going to be having more Facebook posts, Twitter posts, and we're really excited about that. We've had a slow start from the snows in April and the wet cold season, but we're hoping to rebound. We're committed to promoting the courses, and we've listed some of our events in the report. We had the Spring Scramble, which we had 83 players on Saturday, April 28th. We had our second annual Senior Spring Scramble, which we had 80 players last Friday, and we were very happy with the results of those two tournaments. I mean, this is something that, we've been, like I said, just a second annual, and to have 80 players, it was great. We had the Callaway Demo Day, which was very successful. Sold about $4,000 worth of equipment there. And then we had our TaylorMade demo day on the 29th, and that was a Sunday, and it was unbelievable how busy we were. We have a FlightScope launch monitor, and we were fitting people. We had five people. Doug Scholsky, our head pro, Andy Otis, our clubhouse manager, Josh Boucher, our assistant golf professional, myself, and then our tech rep, and all five of us were fitting people at the same time at that TaylorMade demo day, which is just unbelievable. It was busy from 10 to 2. It was crazy how busy that was. Our best one ever. And then we just had the Titleist demo day this last weekend, and I think we'll end up selling about $4,000 worth of equipment there. And then we have one more demo day, which is our Tour Edge demo day next Saturday. So great results for all those. So really looking forward to that. As I mentioned, that we're working with Golf Now, but we're also working with Lee Enterprises. They're a local company doing both print advertising and digital advertising, things called geofencing, where we're, you know, putting ads out in certain areas. If you're at a driving range like Capone's or something, it'll come up that come play Brightondale Links and Petrifying Springs. So that's worked well for us in the past. We also have YouTube going, so we purchased like 200,000 impressions there. So excited about our advertising. Hopefully that it'll increase our play. And then league play started last week. Basically most of our leagues will be running this week. We got to add two new leagues this season. So we were very happy about doing that. And basically all of our weekday evenings at Pets is filled up, and then Brightondale, there's still some openings because we have five nines that we try to run leagues on there. So the projects that we're finishing up with, we're fine-tuning the use of the launch monitor every demo day that we do. We have all four or five of us trying to utilize that as well as we can. So it's very exciting that we want to be the go-to fitters in the area, and it also helps with our lessons. The combination of the refresh of the golf shops and the new merchandise have really given our clubhouses a professional look, and our merchandise, even with our rounds being down in April, our merchandise sales were up. So that's great. And then we're very excited about working with the Lohman Golf Design. We have our pre-bid meeting for our white birch bunker removal and renovation project. They're doing the architectural work, and we're going to go out for a bid on removing about 40 bunkers, I believe, and then rebuilding all the ones that are there on the white birch. We're going to take them, remove all the sand, remove all the drainage, and then make sure that they're draining well, and then replace new sand. So it's something that really needs to be done. We're going to use this thing called a Better Billy Bunker Liner, and it puts a polymer underneath the sand so that the till from underneath doesn't keep coming up and integrating with the sand and making the bunker so much better draining and last longer by using that liner. So very excited about that project. So that's what we get going in golf.
I have questions only because I think I'm new here.
What we'll do here is come through me or raise your hand and then.
Right. Okay. So I don't.
Go ahead, Supervisor Dargan.
Okay. To start with the compliance maintenance annual report, this is just an annual report required by
DNR.
By who?
The DNR.
Okay, that is the DNR. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just trying to get my head around this thing.
Anyone that owns a sewer plant or operates a sewer plant has to do one agent.
And so there is a sewer plant on location there?
Yeah.
Okay. That's at Brightondale, but not at Pets?
Right.
Correct.
Okay.
I was going to dive into it a little bit from a technical standpoint. So we've got standard municipal sewer at Pets, whereas this is a private municipal sewer. So it literally is a baby water treatment plant is what it is.
Cool. And then This was done independently then? This isn't one of our guys goes through and gives these, you know?
Actually, we do provide the information, and then they come down and do an audit. They did one last year.
So they do audit it periodically?
Yep.
Okay, great. Don't mean to take over the whole thing. Lee Enterprises, do they specialize in like golf marketing, like this other Golf Now Plus?
They not golf marketing, but they do. They do digital. Alchemy is their digital company that specializes in social media and digital advertising.
That's what Lee does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Flight Scope Launch Monitor. That's to help. Does that help the fit clubs, sell clubs, teach everything, all of it, none?
It's a computer system that we purchased last year with proceeds from our County Executive Cup, and it gives you 28 different data points. So it'll give you your spin rate of your ball, it'll give you your distance that it's flying, it'll give you your ball speed, it'll give you your club head speed, it'll give you your angle of attack. It helps fit by giving you the right shaft to put people into
right and proper angle, excuse me.
Yep.
The club line on the ground or high. Okay, so it's kind of a little bit of everything. You said a lot of areas. Mm-hmm. Is that something that is being highly promoted then to improve someone's golf game and all that? Is this something that can be used during the winter, during the down months?
We haven't had an application to use it during the winter as of yet. We're looking into that, but right now, you know, it's used for our club fitting and our lessons.
Okay. And then you spoke a little bit about the bunkers. Is there something wrong with the bunkers all throughout the White Birch, or is it just this is going to be a little bit of investment now and will less expense later?
Well, Brightondale was built in 1972, and there's a useful life for bunkers. And as I stated, that till that comes up from underneath the sand, you know, commingles, and then the sand doesn't drain as well and doesn't play
but
as well.
But that's not the reason why you're pulling out 40 bunkers.
Right.
No, it's reason. You're doing some redesigning of the course.
Right. And we've got Bob Lohman's professional Lohman golf design, and we've went through each and every bunker, and we've kind of highlighted it. We want to create some grass depressions or some mounds, still some playing features, but the sand traps are the second most expensive feature on the golf course to maintain. So we're trying to maintain our profitability by reducing our maintenance.
Change the course a little bit, get a little bit less maintenance headaches, and make what you have better for drainage and ongoing maintenance.
And playability, too, because it will speed up play, which is always one of the big concerns, is that things are slow. And there's a number of the things Dan outlined. It basically fits with, you've heard me like the other day with the orientation talk about some of the lean stuff that we're doing. And if you work in industry, you probably heard that. That's basically, this is kind of one of those things in golf where it's gonna give you improved playability, reduce maintenance costs. It's a kind of a win-win-win.
Also brings in other players that may have played it in the past.
That was too tough for them. Now it'll be more fun to play.
Well, I understand about the bunkers. My neighbor's a golf pro, and he's removing his bunker too. So. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had something?
Yeah. I was just curious what cost compliance for that flight scope monitor evaluations.
We've been, in order to promote it, we've been charging $20 for a flight scope demonstration or use of it. During the demo days, there is no charge, but in addition, like in a lesson fee, or even we've promoted it where we've had our own demo days without the companies coming and just with our product, and we've charged $20 an hour for that or whatever it takes to fit you, and then we give it back to you in off the purchase price. So we've really been trying to promote it and get the word of mouth out that how useful it is.
And the kids, Dan.
Yeah, we've been using it for our junior program. They absolutely love it. Love seeing their swings on video. Love seeing their numbers that they're creating, club head speed, distance.
Got to play the kids' card. John.
Right?
You got to play the kids' card. Yeah. No, it is. It was actually the youth. The executive cup is the youth.
Yeah.
That's what the funds were used, and it's part of this training program for the youth.
They love it.
It's a big help.
Back to swing
on
the club.
Anything else for Dan? We'll move on. One thing I want to mention before we get to Frank is that timing has been horribly important with all our projects in the last probably 4 years. We have slowly climbed out of the recession here in the area, and we've had a shortage of contractors probably since 2009, 2010. Our timing has been very fortunate on bidding. Ray and Frank have gotten to be professionals at this, and what we're looking at in the next couple of years is things getting more difficult. So when Frank gets into his report here, he'll recognize a little of that in some of the pre-construction things that we're doing. And luckily we've finished off some very big projects here, but our roofing thing is multi-year, and there's where some of our concerns. So Frank, we'll turn it over to you.
I think Mike is first.
What?
Well, Mike is first.
You got a bad agenda?
I'm sorry.
No? All right. Well, I want to start with the spreadsheet, if everybody's got that, especially the new members. I want to explain that a little bit so you can kind of understand it. It's really loaded with a lot of information. Take your time and look at it, and if you've got any questions that are specific, feel free to reach out. I'll try and answer them best I can. Basically, this is a sheet that summarizes the last 3+ years of energy savings projects that we've done. I think John Poole, when you were here before, the sheet was kind of flipped the other way around, and the big list was on top and the short list was on the bottom. And now it's there's just 4 on the top to work on and complete. The other ones down below are all completed. A couple of the key topics in the spreadsheet is projected annual savings every year. And right now for the completed projects, we're hovering right around $65,000 a year in the 3 years and continues to grow. The other column to look at is incentives, potential incentives from Focus on Energy programs. I don't have a total on that, but if you look at it and add those up, they're pretty significant. And then the last one is the payback in years for all the projects. A couple of them are pretty high, but they are more maintenance-based than savings on energy dollars, but quite a few of them are a pretty decent payback. So a lot of information there. Go ahead and just look at it, you know, next meeting or before that, give me a call, send me an email, I'll answer anything I can. No changes this month. What you'll typically see is in red. That's what the changes will be from month to month. So at the top, you just see the new date for the month. But I wanted to give everybody a chance to kind of look at this, especially the new ones.
Mike, I just wanted to add a little bit. So we've got an energy team that meets roughly quarterly. That's got Mike sits on it. We've got an in-house electrician, an in-house HVAC guy. We've got Focus on Energy folks that are there.
Amy, Bob.
And somebody from UU Extension. So it's a very proactive. That's how that whole thing came into existence. And actually, Jim Kupfer, our finance, Chris's boss, who's at a conference right now, he helped kind of coordinate putting the thing together. Basically, as the list gets dwindled down, we will add to it and identify other projects that are going to, by investing capital, you can see most of the paybacks. It's a simple payback calculation, but it's still valid. And we actually met with some of the guys from Kennel Lighting in town and a couple weeks back on a kind of a guinea pig project for them that they want to field test some of their product on in our facilities at no charge to us. And they were kind of blown away at how advanced we are with LEDs and our knowledge of programming systems and stuff. They were really kind of blown away by it. And it's really Mike's operation that does that. So we try to stay ahead of the game, not invest in anything that's a science experiment, but by the same token, invest in something that's proven, that's going to give us payback. Because every dollar we spend to keep the lights on is a local tax levy dollar. It's not grant funded or anything like that. So anything we can do to drop those costs is good.
And there's nothing on here longer than 10.1 years as compared to Foxconn at 24 years. So this is something that Mike has been in total control of. And it's horribly impressive each month when I see it. There was one that I can't remember anymore, but some of them just blow you away, the return that we've got on these things. And as Ray said, This is real money. This isn't like some campaign flyer. This is real money saved, and it is and has to be levied out. It's very important. Each thing that we do that has this type of success is something that can't be even, you can't explain it at budget time, because it doesn't hurt the soul. It's a lot of fun to read. So, and if you do have questions, like Mike would love to sit down and go over.
I might have missed this. Potential incentives, where do those come from?
Focus on energy.
That's all focus on energy. Okay.
Through We Energies.
That's fine. I didn't know if there was other.
Yeah, they assign an energy advisor to us, and we have access to an engineer, and it's a nice program.
Okay, we'll let you go, Mike. No.
Nope. Not done yet.
One other question. When you're installing these upgrades to the LED lighting, are you also doing the motion sensors on the light switches?
Yeah. Most of our fixtures are Cree out of our seat. And it's mostly because of their quality and the fact that they're local.
Warranty.
And they have a warranty that's 10 years, which most in the industry are trying to catch up to. Mm-hmm. They're getting there. There's a few more that do it now. But Cree has got a lot of top guys that live in Kenosha, and they're very willing to work with us because of the commitment. We actually bid out for the big projects and got them to hold that price for pushing 3 years now out. So it's been a really good deal for us and a very good relationship. So all the exterior campuses are now completely LED lights except for the detention center. And that one is in process, probably in about another couple weeks it'll start. And then everything outside is done. Then we move to the inside.
So when you start on the interior, then you'll have the motion sensor.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I kind of drifted off.
That's okay.
I didn't answer your question.
I'm just pulling it back.
Yeah, you get me talking on the LEDs, I'll just keep going. So, but yeah, they have smart fixtures. That's what they call them. And they have motion sensors built into them. There's remotes that you can program individual lights, and they will, like our parking ramp, we install those, and they have a feature at the entrance where you just keep them lit all the time, and there's probably a group of maybe 7 to 10 lights. And then once you get into the interior, they dim down to a very low level, probably 20% of their capacity. As soon as a car drives past that initial entrance, so it senses the motion, and they pop right on. And then they time out and drift right back down. So there's big energy savings with that, too.
Yeah. These, if I talk too long tonight, which I have a tendency to do, may get an opportunity to see the lights out here, how they do the same thing. They drop down,
right,
and then they sense you walking through the parking lot, and boom, they pop on. So it's, and the interior ones, some of them in the safety building, if I remember correctly, we've got them actually designed so it measures the light coming into the room and adjusts up automatically as well. So we're trying to stay.
It's a big savings.
It really is.
Yeah, it's huge savings. Yeah, and they continue to get smarter and smarter. Some put cameras in them now so you can get license plates and count cars, and that can tell a sign go on to say lots of them don't bother trying. So that's what Kendall is looking at right now.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Last month, I should say, the county magazines, WCA magazine, there was an interesting article on a program to encourage counties to use solar energy. I don't know if you read that article.
It's a big article in the Sentinel. I wrote it and read it, yeah.
Yeah. What's the future of that, status of that?
We've got a big thing tonight.
Right.
Okay.
I'm serious.
Seaboos?
No,
yeah,
that's your thing.
Yeah.
So, okay. Parks has got a project going on solar, and Matt'll talk about it.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of our initial thing, but I don't know if we'll get into solar the way you're hearing about it. It's got a lot of questions to answer. Milwaukee County is committing to a 20% solar within, I think, 5 years was the article. It's pretty aggressive, but for us, you got to look at where would you put all those panels? Are they going on the roofs? But Frank does the projects on the roofs. All the panels got to come off and then back on.
To drill a little bit, I won't take, Matt can explain what's happening. So what we've done is we really don't want to do any science experiments. We've done a few, and you usually end up on the losing end. I'm thinking of the hybrid lift truck that we had a few years ago. It was grant funded. And
propane cars.
And the propane cars about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So we really don't do the science experiments, but stuff that's proven, we are definitely into doing that. The safety building, if you ever look next time you're down at a county board meeting, The rooftop screening that basically is up there to screen the rooftop units up there, it was designed that if it makes sense 5 years from now, 3 years, 10 years from now to put solar panels, those are designed, they're at the right angle and can support the load that we could mount solar panels up there. And the chases have been sized in the building to go down if we need to add wires. At some point, we don't have to figure out where we're going to run the wires. The chases are sized to accommodate that, so we could put the electrical infrastructure down in the basement. So that's the kind of stuff we try to do, is looking ahead and at least setting things up to accommodate those things down the road. And Frank pointed out, on the spreadsheet, really the only thing that we're capturing is really the direct upfront cost savings. The ongoing maintenance savings, we don't attempt to quantify that in there, but given the reliability of the good, not the ones you get at Menards, but the good LEDs, you will in fact get, the ones at Menards, they're good for 5,000 hours, and 6 months later I'm putting them back in, right? So it's, yeah. But the ones that we get are not like that, and they're warrantied, as Mike said, for 10 years, so that's probably enough.
Anything else for Mike? So you've still got some stuff.
I'm going to So ongoing projects, which you don't have a sheet on. I've got four projects. The first two we heard about the last meeting, so I'll just kind of summarize it for the new ones. Parking ramp storm replacement project is kicked off now. Where it was left with the last meeting, we were waiting for submittals to be received. They were received and approved by the consultants. We did a pull test on some sample sealant that was applied on 430. And the pull test passed. The manufacturer's rep came and did that test. So we were able to proceed with the project. We started it on the 1st of May. They're staging it in groups in the parking ramp so that they've got to obviously block off sections. And with the surface lot and the parking ramp, there's 310 stalls. And on any average day, except Mondays, there's about 150 spots open. It varies from shift to shift a little bit. But with that in mind, we felt comfortable blocking off a maximum of 80 stalls. We went through the first week in that, and we still had stalls open during the process, so it proved to be okay. They're working 4/10s, Tuesday through Friday, just so that Monday is left open for jury day, because jury day just puts it way over the top. There's no parking anywhere on Monday, at least, you know, before noon. They had rain days last week, so they didn't quite finish up their first phase. They're doing that these next 2 days, and then they'll block off another 80 sections. So that's where that project is. Second project is at the pretrial facility. It's the project to install a body scanner. This one is going to start on the 14th, and it only lasts about a week. So nothing spectacular there. It's a $53,000 project. Mosey's doing the work.
But it will really help the Sheriff's Department personnel in terms of processing safely and hygienically, because of the need for body cavity things. I won't say it goes away, but it drops significantly, because this is a scanner that will see whatever you got outside or inside. It's that level of scanning. So they're excited to get it. And they had some type of funding. We just helped basically install a thing. It was a Sheriff's Department project.
Want to check for hernias or
not? Probably could if you knew how to read it.
So those are the two ongoing projects. The new ones to introduce were fire alarm panel replacements, which are starting up this week. We've gone through a process of basically replacing all the fire panels in all the buildings. They reached an age where they were obsolete, and there's different stages of obsolescence, and we've reached the stage where you can't get parts anymore. Before that, they discontinue making them, but there's a supply that lasts for a couple of years and now we're exhausted. So if we had a fire panel go down, we couldn't get parts for it, we'd be at risk and have to do fire watches until we can get it replaced. Might take 2 or 3 weeks, so big deal. But all of them have been replaced except three buildings, and they've become obsolete in 2018, so we budgeted for that. It's KCAB, Molinaro, and the pretrial facility. We basically use Simplex and Siemens, the two biggest and largest fire alarm panel companies there are, just for the reliability and quality of service. They are starting on the Molinaro and pretrial Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. KCAB, I think, starts probably within a week and a half. I haven't gotten quite the details, but they're just quick jobs. They're just one-for-one replacements. There isn't a ton of rewiring to do, so that'll wrap up pretty quick. I'm sure next time we talk about this, I'll just say it's complete. Then the last one, the courthouse chiller replacement. So the chiller's up on the rooftop. It's the whole system for the courthouse. It's a pretty big job. Engineering and bid spec writing is being done right now. It's near completion, probably about a week away, I'm thinking. Once we bid it out, then the contract will be awarded, and it'll be started probably in fall, maybe October 1st-ish, just to get the heating season over, because we'll have to shut down the air conditioner for a while. Figuring that to be about a six-week project. Get it done just in time for the cold weather, so it's looking good so far. There's a lot of engineering work to do on that. There's a lot of different choices we can go with. So.
Any questions for me? If not, now we'll move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mike.
The first project, the safety building addition, second floor project, which also included the fleet maintenance building. All the sheriff, all joint services, the medical examiner operations are up and running in the new space, including the emergency operations center and fleet maintenance. A few punch list items remain, but we're considering this project substantially complete. Just a little background, this was a $7.6 million project to build out the second floor of the public safety building, which when they did the addition, they left empty for these future considerations for taking almost 100-year-old woodwork shop that had gone out of business and creating a state-of-the-art fleet maintenance facility for the sheriff squads and the police squads, moving them out of the public safety building and then turning that area into the medical examiner, both their autopsy suites, labs, and their offices, which save the county money because we are renting space in the old Kenosha Memorial Hospital. It's now Frater East, I think, or Frater South, and consolidated their offices, which were in a separate building down at the job center. So it gained a lot of efficiency, saved us money by the rent, and also we've got better operations. So overall, it killed a lot of birds with one stone. If there's no questions, I'll move on to the next one. Public safety building and the pretrial roof replacement. The chairman had said this is an ongoing, we're tackling about $500,000 worth of roofs per year. The consultant estimated this would be about $650,000 replacement. From what we learned, we did the engineering the year before, and so we could get the bids out right away at the beginning of the year. That's asking contractors and everybody, what could we do to get better pricing? And they said, do it as soon as we can so that their books are empty, they're more aggressive, and it's really worked. We got this contract for about $417,000, so which has been consistent with what we've been seeing. As Dennis said, you know, as things pick up here, that's going to get harder and harder to do. But we got some ideas how we can maybe improve on this. And also by bidding both the public safety building and pretrial, which were right next to each other and both needed to be done. By putting them together, we got the better pricing with the economies of scale. So we're looking at starting the PSB roof on the 14th of this month. We're looking at completing it about June 11th. Replacement of the pretrial roof is scheduled to start then right there on June 11th and hopefully be complete by June 28th. These are a little aggressive dates, but we're hoping it'll work out. Of course, you know, bad weather, things like that could give us a little bit of a delay. But we've been working with the contractor, we've been working with the sheriff, law enforcement, the areas that we're going to be strategically, the lay down areas where the crane's going to be, trying to minimize the impact on any parking and to the public downtown. If there's no questions, I'll go on to the next one. Anderson House Preservation Project. This is Anderson Arts Center on the campus of Kemper. This is similar to, it's a 1929 building, right in that age of the courthouse and the administration building downtown, and Reuther. And when you get to this, it needs the exterior restoration, not so much aesthetic, but to keep water from getting into the building. They've had leaks in the roof for years they've been dealing with. The stones, the mortar is starting to crack and wear away, and you don't want that water to get in behind there, get at the steel, and then it starts rusting and pushing the stones out. So by making the exterior watertight, the roof, the walls, it'll save us money in the long run. So that's a big part of this project. We're scoping it out. We're also looking at the HVAC inside. What can we do to for their museum displays, things like that? Maybe, you know, what can we do to maybe bring in some more business? So we're scoping all that out right now with the architects, engineers. We'll be selecting a construction manager by the end of May. We're targeting the bid specifications going out for bid on September 1st.
Yes?
Just a question, being a West Ender. Is the Anderson House, so it's an art center. During Christmas time, there's, I think it was the Simmons Mansion that gets all Christmased up. Is that the building close to that, or am I thinking of something? Where is this at?
It's on the south end of that campus.
It's on the south end of that.
So
okay.
It doesn't look like the Kemper Center, because that kind of all blends in terms of the brick that was used. This is literally, though, if you're standing facing Kemper this way, it's on your far right-hand side. It's kind of a more white, almost, it's not stucco, but it looks like stucco.
It's not like the other construction.
Yeah.
Is. Okay.
That's the Anderson Mansion.
It's across the parking lot that was Anderson's house, and they donated it to Kemper.
Okay. And it's right on the lake, right?
Pretty much, yep.
Okay, thank you.
No other questions? Move to the last one. As the chairman had mentioned, we're doing one courthouse renovation a year, one courtroom renovation a year inside the courthouse. We just finished branch 4 with all the punch list items and things, and we're beginning to scope out for branch 1, taking those lessons learned from branch 4 and applying them to branch 1 and starting to scope that out. That'll be a fall project. That's it for my side.
Remind me how much money you saved on that first one. It was going to be like $450,000, and then what was it?
For the branch 4 remodel? We're just counting up all the, we're still getting the last invoices, so if I can give you the final number next month, but we've got the final.
They're just an estimate.
Yeah, if it wasn't as awesome as it originally appeared. Mm-hmm. So the low bid, if you remember, was like, like under $100,000. And it was like, and we went through a pretty intense vetting process with a construction firm out of Chicago area. Had never been on anything up here. They were committed to doing it. Yep, we're going to do it. We got this. Because the architect and Frank both went down to see their operations to see if they even had the capabilities. And they did. They had their own millwork shop with all these kind of European craftsman guys working there. At the end of the day, when they got into it about 3 months, I think the economy started to pick up. Their portfolio must have filled up. He's trying to get answers as to when they're going to start. I think we had the pre-construction meeting already. It was all done. And then, the bottom line is that didn't happen. So we had to go to the next one on the list, which was still well below what our budget was. I don't remember what their base bid was, but I want to say it was probably still more than double what the low bid guy was. And we were able to negotiate with them taking the job on as long as it fit in their schedule. And that's why it got delayed. We lost about, at least 6, maybe 8 months on that project. And then they started it in fall. It was supposed to be a spring project. And they got it done. They did a real good job. It turned out we're still well below what the budget was, but the savings weren't as awesome as it looked like they could have been had the first. And it was the only time, because we went back after the contractor, because they had a bid bond that guaranteed. It's the only time in the county's history that Joe Cardamone could find that we actually recovered money out of bid bond. We got, I think, 10 grand or something like that back from them not being following through on what it is they said they were going to do. So it helped somewhat. And just kind of sticking it to them felt good.
Yeah, well, I remember I toured that after it was complete. It was very nice.
They did really good, detailed, quality work.
So who puts the budget together, or an estimated budget, before it goes out? I know we need to do that so we have some kind of idea where we're going to be at. Is that an internal thing? Is that an architectural thing? Is that?
It'll depend on the project. Typically, not internally. We will rely on outside expertise for that. Some projects will go with the smaller projects, typically we'll use the architect's estimate. Bigger projects where we tend to get a construction manager involved, the architect and the construction manager will work together and refine and give us that number. And then we use those numbers to actually budget for the project.
All right.
That's the process.
There we go. Thank you, Frank. Clement.
Yeah. First of all, just let me redistribute these. The one that was sent out was slightly unrefined. So this is the actual. Let me just distribute. So use this instead of that one, otherwise it's more.
What was that one?
Well, this one was during the printing process. So this is the final one.
I see my street is on this one again, so that's
good. Now, the first one was during the trying to figure it out and looking long term. And then this one, the difference is so minor, but this is just for this year. This one extends further. So
it's not that this one's inaccurate.
Well, there's some change, a few changes there.
Oh, so it is inaccurate.
Yes.
No, I was going to say, you got to report.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Since you handed out the map, Clement, maybe just go through the map since everybody's looking at that. Just tell them kind of the process you use in terms of the passer rating system and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Let me just go because it goes through with this one. I'll just start with general operations. The division is finalizing tune-ups of the trucks and the major equipment in preparation for summer maintenance operations. Weather permitting, the major summer operations is scheduled to start the week of May 14th. But then again, it depends on the weather and other things that are happening within the county. And of course, paving, which is one of our major summer operations, is the schedule for the road segment that, again, this is what we are looking at doing for this year. It doesn't mean we're going to do all. It depends on the budget, it depends on the weather, it depends on unforeseen circumstances. Like last year, we had the flooding, and it took most of our time and resources, and so we couldn't do as much. So, but typically, we try to schedule as much as possible, and all of this scheduling, whether we have, like this year we had 16.1 miles, what we're really shooting for is generally like 17 miles, because we have a passes rating system, which was based from a DOT system that we're using in the past. The DOT is no more using that system, but that it's a very good tool to rate our roads. So it rates our roads from 1 to 10, 1 being the poorest roads, and 10 being just newly reconstructed or newly resurfaced. That's the best roads. Now, it's the only time we consider them for resurfacing is when it's below 5. So from 5 and below, and most of our roads are actually between 3, rarely 3, but between 4 and and 10. So we do our best to focus on the worst roads, which is 4, and we are working ourselves up with the understanding that, well, by the time the 5th is getting to 4, we'll be getting to the 5th one. And so that's what we typically do to rate this road, is basically based on that parcel rating that we then advise that these are the roads that we think should be scheduled. However, again, certain roads might have low ratings, but we might not do those roads because of other activities that are happening in that area. For example, you might have construction. You might have some special event that is so important for the region that you don't want to interfere with. A good example is like B to the B, County Trunk Highway B. Sunam Lakes is planning to install, to construct a sewage system along B. B was scheduled. We were thinking of doing B this year, but because of those kind of activities, we have to look for another segment, and so on and so forth. So that's typically the method that we use to select these roads in order for maintenance.
I do have a question. And by the way, thank you for calling me the other day about those roads. I appreciate that. When do the communities get notified when, you know, you're talking about, or how do the communities get notified? You say, okay, we're going to be doing, like you talked about, you know about the construction going on mm-hmm. in B that Salem Lakes, I guess, is looking at doing. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you're not going to do B this year, mm-hmm. or at least not planning it this year. Mm-hmm. When would that... So, for instance, Twin Lakes is doing EM. They're going to be closed tomorrow and Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Not that anything was scheduled for out there, but, you know, they were scheduled to do some work. So how would they know going forward, like Randall, Twin Lakes, Kenosha, that you're going to be doing on the roads? What's the time frame on that?
Yeah, we typically let them know about between a week and 3 to 5 days, because sometimes it's the way, by our nature, because we are technically a maintenance department. So if we have major maintenance going on, we have to hit those maintenance. Then when we are done with all the emergency, then we now go on the paving. Because if the paving can wait, so we don't like scheduling this way ahead of schedule because the time can change. So what we typically do about maybe 5 days to 1 week, when we are absolutely sure, we provide the information to the communication manager, Joe Potente. He puts it on the website, and then he informs the supervisors and the local municipalities. So generally, that's what we do. Sometimes it's tricky. Sometimes, you know, it gets into 3 days. So usually you'll see like 3 days before we start. Then you start seeing the emails going out of 1 week. Between 1 week and 3 days, that's
and
what
we
do.
Will they have a copy of this? Like, as soon as you say, this is what we're doing, obviously things could change. Mm-hmm. This is our plans. Will these go out to the towns and villages so they know that this is going to be coming at some point in time?
We started doing that last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we typically put it on our website, and we encourage people to check it on the website. Joe Potente will typically do that. And then... yes, sometimes we send them to supervisors that are interested to get it, but we don't normally distribute them to the locals.
Okay. No, that's just, I just want to know, because if something comes up, I'll know at least that what the process is.
Yes. I didn't want to post this on the website before showing them to you, so to this committee, and then because if we get feedback and we need to do some adjustment, which we typically don't, but... So after today, you'll probably be seeing it on the website.
And then the green line where it says CHIP, 6 miles, it used to be 6 miles. Mm-hmm. That means to be rounding up, is that what they're doing?
No, the CHIP is actually a county highway improvement program. Okay. So it's partly funded. So that one is separated from what is done by the first one, the blue one, the county trunk highway paving, is done by a county crew.
Okay.
And then the second one, that one, sometimes we do some work for the townships. That one is just for the township, which is about 0.7 miles mainly from Wheatland.
Okay.
And then the 2018 CHIP program is a 50-50% split with the state-funded projects.
Okay.
So we applied for the program, and then if if we are successful, then the state pays 50, and then we pay the county.
And,
pays
and if anything does have to get ground up, that stuff gets transferred to the county financing, then, correct?
Well, we typically try to do that, but you have to, it's a very tricky business. You have to evaluate whether it's going to cost you more to transport a small quantity of material to the pit, and then by the time you calculate all of that, you discover that you're paying more for the material than you're actually. So we do a careful work. It depends.
But if you were doing it, it would go to the highway seat.
Correct.
That's something that would happen. They're very sensitive right out there with what's going on, as well as, you know, you've got Thielen starting up here, which, you know, you've heard an earful of, too. So.
Well, I'm very aware, but that happened in 2006 or something?
No one's done anything. There's not been any movement.
Correct, but I mean...
That's why all of a sudden all that noise was going on. They're all screaming Thielen's name and hanging him in effigy, and it was the company. I will have another question later, but it doesn't concern me.
Okay.
So, Clella, before we move to the next thing on that B, you just reminded me. Mm-hmm. Last year we had the flooding, and then it's only happened a couple times in my lifetime, and I lived there for 60, or, you know, I had that property there for 60-some years, at F. Before we paid B, I know they're doing the work out to their sewer plant. Mm-hmm. And this is good timing. It flooded there and it closed that road. Mm-hmm. Last year, mm-hmm. B was closed, F was closed, W was closed. And now that Salem Lakes has been combined, mm-hmm. they closed the Wilmot Firehouse. Mm-hmm. So there could be a period where fire safety, if B isn't open, could be a problem. So this would be the time, not now, but before we would repave it. There's a section of road, it's real easy to, you were out there when there was the flooding, but it's, and you don't know the people's names, so I can't stay by this guy's farm, but it is from the farm that is just south of the sewer plant there. In the town where there's a low spot, and that's where Fox River come in and flooded and closed Highway B. So before we pave there, would be the time for us to look at that. And I think it's a pretty easy fix, but that's just, raising. And and before we put money into it, I think it's worth you looking at, but you've got a year to do it, because we're not going to pave that this year, correct?
No.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I've got even pictures from when it was flooded, but I'm sure you were out there too. It's
I know right where you're
between the Packard and Wolf's farm. Yep. It drops down
because there's land for sale on the east, right where that is.
Yeah,
and it's under most of it's underwater even now.
Right.
It's for
right.
sale.
Right. So, I was just concerned for the fire safety, because I know they closed the Wilmot Firehouse.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's getting stuff in and out.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
I'll look at that, yes. So, any other question on paving? So, paving is one of the major ones, but we also do other maintenance concurrence with paving, and that includes of the crack sealing, mowing, shouldering, culvert repairs or replacing, and brushing. So those are some of the activities that we carry out during the summertime. Now, on other projects, I know those of you who are new, this project, County Trunk Highway S, has been going on for a while. The way it's written now is, except if you've been in the past, it might be a little bit challenging for you to get the history, but generally I'll just give a brief history. We were having some issues with the airport because we needed to acquire a right of way in order to execute the project properly and safely, and to expand the road that is south of H we're supposed to expand the road to have to accommodate four lanes of traffic. To do that, we'll need to acquire property from the airport. But with the airport now, for you to acquire, you have acquire property from the airport, you need to go through the FAA. And so we'll be going through with the FAA. It's a long process. We went through what they call the RPZ, the runway protection analysis, and now we are in the last phase, which is the concurrent use, because the airport, the FAA does not sell property. They can, but you can use land concurrently with the airport. So we are at that stage where we are about to obtain that concurrent use, they call it concurrent use permit. So when you see it there, what I wrote about the concurrent use, I was just giving an update as if I was continuing with the meeting with the same group. There's some new people here. So that concurrent use, we are about to, almost at the verge of obtaining it. We are just waiting for approval from FAA and everything will be completed. And then on the County Trunk Highway S project also, we are actually at, we're still at the design stage. And at this moment, the FHWA is also reviewing the design work, which is the environmental document. So the design stage have different milestones, and one of the milestones is the approval of the environmental document. The FHWA typically takes 3 months to review the environmental documents, and they are reviewing it right now. And within that 3 months, it will still fit into the schedule of the County Trunk Highway S project, which is we are anticipating to start construction in 2020.
Yes, ma'am.
Clement, how much right-of-way are you looking at acquiring out by the airport? What's there now, and how much more are you looking at acquiring?
For that particular section, it's about 0.25 acres. It's a very small piece of land.
Tiny little sliver.
Okay.
And it's taken us more than a year to get to this point. So here I was just giving a report, but after coming here today, I realized that I should have done more to bridge the gap. Yeah.
Thank you.
Question that I had, and it had to do with lighting. Supposedly, I was talking to Bill Schultz. He's the president, I guess, of the Lake Shangri-La Property Owners Association Board. And he was working with Brian, I'm going to screw this name up, Stutt. I don't know, he's in the, you know, in the county. But talking about some street lights out in that area. Is that, I don't know that much about the project. It sounded like that they were supposed to get a street light or two out there. They're having drug sales and stuff like that in the middle of the night. Thought that the light up there was going to do it. So I guess they're under the impression he's supposed to be at one of their meetings or supposed to have been with them with some meetings.
Clint, do you know Brian?
Brian is in the DA's office. He's picked up witness, one of the coordinators.
I haven't heard anything about this. Have you?
No.
Should I just contact Brian directly?
For street, anything that you want to communicate or you want to for the project to investigate, you can send it to me,
okay.
And then I'll run it through the project team, and then I'll give you feedback. I think that'll be the fastest way.
Yeah, he brought that up and contacted me on it a while back. But give me some information, and we'll go from there.
So he's requesting for lights.
Well, yeah, it was a street light project that they were working on.
Who's working on it, Mark?
Brian Stute with Bill Schultz, who's president of the Lake.
It's the DA's office that doesn't do street light.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. But he said that.
Unless they're doing something with it.
Sorry?
Unless they're doing something with
the village or something.
Yeah, because we don't have anybody here.
I'm just saying that.
And the county doesn't do street lights either.
Right. No. Yeah, because it's usually local thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Find out and then just get contact to Clemens. We can sort through it to see what.
If you can, after the meeting, you can just give them to me.
Yeah. Let me see.
Sounds like somebody that's on a committee for some subdivision.
Right. That's basically what the Lake Shangri-La Homeowner Association
is. Right. And you might have sold them a bill of goods because we don't install streetlights.
Yeah,
because he's telling me he was supposed to spend at meetings with them and stuff. I'm just going by what they're telling
me. Yeah.
So I will give him some information.
Okay.
Some of the contacts.
Yeah, I'll do
his
that.
Name is Bill Schultz.
Okay.
That's all I have. Mm.
So the second project, Spike River Trail project. Again, this is a for those who are new. This is a bike trail project that links the Petrifying Spring Park. The intent is to link the Petrifying Spring Park with the bike trail for Mount Pleasant. However, Mount Pleasant is yet to construct their bike trail. So we are constructing ours now. The county is constructing now, and Mount Pleasant will connect at a later time. So this project is along Highway 31, on the east side of Highway 31 from County Trunk Highway A all the way to KR. So that's the project. So this project that I'm talking about is almost 80% complete. The main thing that is left there is for to be completed is the paving, the grading, and the boardwalk. The boardwalk is about 75% complete. The contractor is projecting to substantially complete the project by Labor Day. I was there this afternoon to take a look because this report was done a week prior to now, so most of the time I'm gauging, so sometimes the information you might have will need to be updated. So I drove there this afternoon, and I'm not sure about the speed. The speed of the project. I hope they could beat Memorial Day, but they told me they're still projecting to complete it by Memorial Day. I'm not so sure when I look at how the construction is going.
It's very impressive. I was out there, and I, heard so much about it, and I spent some time out there. Quite the little bit of engineering.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah. From Tennessee, is the beer garden is it near A or JR there? I forget.
It's near JR.
JR. Okay. Right. So it doesn't quite go down that far.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
But you can come into the park.
Yeah.
Because it's right across. It connects into the park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can take other trails or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, what's the next road to the north?
A.
No, or north of A? Or
no. Well, the beer garden is on which one?
JR.
Yeah, and the next one north is
A.
Is A, and it's right there.
Yep.
So, I mean, you just come right into the park. Yeah, it does connect. Take a ride out there if you got some time. I didn't quite understand what all they were doing, and it's pretty cool.
They were looking forward to one. Clement was out the other day. I think there was four or five bike riders that you ran into, and they were just thrilled. They can't wait for it all to be done there. And I don't know if they were from Racine.
I don't know where they came from, but so impressive. And he says, I can't wait. If I'm just quoting him, he said, I can't wait. And he was very happy that the county was doing what we're doing out there. As a matter of fact, he said he would like to thank the genius who thought about it. So that was what he said. I took all the credit, but I said I did all the design, I thought about it, and I convinced them to. Anyway, I didn't say that, but.
Mount Pleasant is about to be broke for the next 20 years, so
yeah.
I doubt if they're going to get their end of the bike trail.
They were scheduled to do it this year, but that was before everything.
Before
so
the bikes got there.
Yeah.
They got no money.
So we're hoping, it will be completed anyway. The deadline is supposed to be 4th of July, so 4th of July, we expect them to be down and out of there. The next set of projects are actually DOT projects and Foxconn related projects. County Trunk Highway A from I-94 to H, and H from A to KR is being resurfaced because it's going to be the the what they call the mitigation route for the Foxconn project. That's where the trucks will be using. Again, this report was done a little bit early. I was anticipating that by now they would have completed the resurfacing of A and H. That is when I say H, that is in Kenosha County. That's from the KR to A. But I drove in this afternoon again just to make sure that this information here was accurate. Well, A is completed, but H is not. So because they said they want to pave it at the same time. Well, it has binder on it, but it doesn't have the surface. So they are planning to do that in conjunction with H north of KR because they just want to get one sweep all the way up. So, but things are moving and the roads are being constructed. We hope that they'll get out of there soon enough for the bikers to start using A, because a lot of bikers are using A. I've been getting a lot of some calls asking when will A be clear for construction, things like that. And part of this project too, the county negotiated famous bailings that were going out there to the pit, and yes, so it's beneficial because the county is looking at County Trunk Highway S in the future when we're going to be constructing it on the north, when it's expanding it on the north, and the north most of the section on the north is farmlands. Mm-hmm. So you're going to need a lot of extra material. So the county is now trying to make sure that we have all this kind of materials in anticipation that will help also to bring down the cost of the project. So that's some of the things that we could use those materials for.
Just please let me know if it's going to be at night, because that noise just carried all the way through many neighborhoods, many, many neighborhoods. And you know, it's ironic, no one from Wilmot complained. It was all Randall. It was all Randall.
Yeah. Well, the town of Randall was informed weeks in advance.
Not according to Jim Cruiser. He had mentioned to Bob that, oh, they're going to be bringing spoils in.
Right.
But Cruiser said that was only like 10 days ahead of schedule. And according to Bob and Cruiser, he says, well, no, I never did tell them it was going to be overnight. Never did tell it was going to be from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. So that was something that he admitted. He dropped the ball on that one. But again, I don't care who it comes from. I mean, if something's going to happen at night, I got to let those people know. They're so sensitive of what's going to happen and what's going on. At least they would know this is a temporary thing. It's not going to be a 2-year Foxconn project of these things.
And I went out there when I heard about it. What was your biggest complaint? Because I was out there and it was no noise.
What time were you out there?
Out there 2 or 3 times. I mean, when they were hauling like 10 o'clock to 1, 9, 11.
The trucks, the backing up, the beep, beep, beep. Just the moving of the tractors, you can hear, believe me, those people that live right there in Deer Path, it is right there. It's all night long. You know, you have kids, you're trying to get your sleep so you get going.
Yeah, I sat there for an hour and a half to one night. Yeah. I didn't see it, but I think most of the panic was people, again, for crazy reasons, because it's a fact. The Elims do have the rights.
Oh yeah, no, but they're not going to have the right to do it at 2 in the morning.
But there are numerous people, from what I heard.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Thought the Elims were starting their draft.
Yeah, you're right.
In the middle of the night.
Here's the other thing. I can't start a lawnmower in the town of Randall before 7 o'clock in the morning, but all night long this is going on. People were just out of their minds.
Most people I talked to understood it. And it was done for safety for school buses and for people for rush hour and stuff.
They just needed to know. They just needed to know ahead of time. That's all. Right. And then the executive just sent out, did a lit job in most of the neighborhood, but not all, in this part of the neighborhood. That's fine. You know, everyone got the information. I got out as much as I could. Just let us know. We just need a little forewarning. That's all.
I've learned from the mistakes. I've tried to keep everybody informed. I know the county exec said it was him, but it was actually me. I didn't distribute the information on my schedule.
Again, we all have an advantage. We all need to do ahead of time. I think anything that's going to be outside the realm of regular business hours, from construction or running trucks up and down roads or whatever it is, I mean, really, we should look. Because they're going to find out. They're just going to wonder why Aaron Collins. What are they doing under the cover of darkness?
All right. The next project is I-94 reconstruction from 142 to Highway 20. This is still in connection with the Foxconn. They're going to be, you know, completing all the interstate work, and this will also include the reconstruction of the County Trunk Highway KR interchange. The good thing is that they were happy that they did not construct that section of the road prior to now, because now they could really make all the adjustments to accommodate Foxconn, because they were saying that if they did it the way they wanted to do it, that the way it was initially designed, then they will be doing a lot of modification there right now, and it would not make sense to be coming there to do a modification less than 10 years. So they're kind of happy they didn't do that construction. But this construction is scheduled to start sometime in June. The only thing I'll give caution is that with this kind of projects, there are a lot of changes. So if I could tell you today that this project will be starting on Monday, and then on Tuesday, you'll still be waiting for the project to start, because it's just the nature of this kind of mega projects. The weather, permits, all kinds of sort of things can slow the project. So there will be so many times that I'll be giving information here, and by the time you walk out the door, it'll be different. So I just caution now, because that's just how these projects are.
But did they get their funding?
Not yet. So, they would have started the construction already.
I was told the state, in their ultimate wisdom, decided to tell or offer this and going to do this, and they thought there was federal funding coming that they didn't get.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they don't have the funding for this $37 million project.
No. So, and that's why they're doing it. They kind of pushed everything back, and they let the project, today's the 8th, or tomorrow is the 8th. Tomorrow, that's when they'll be opening the bids.
Yes.
Yeah.
With all money.
And then construction is scheduled to start in June. And still, they don't still have the funds yet. So if, for some reason, the fund doesn't get there by June, then the schedule will change again. So that's just the nature of this schedule.
Right.
Until you see them going on, you cannot say it's going to happen. And the last one, it's something that we just happened to have known just last week.
Yeah,
we were not aware of this. They'll be doing some work on the off ramp on and 165, the tourist center, on the ramp, on the northbound exit ramp. Just within the ramp, there's a driveway that goes into the tourist. So they're eliminating that driveway. And then they'll be constructing a new driveway on the frontage road on the east side of the property. So we just found out last week, and we're not even aware, but we just thought it would be important that you know that very soon. And that work is scheduled to start in June too. So you'll be seeing a lot of activity there. They couldn't give me exactly... They couldn't tell me exactly how the traffic will be impacted on 165 and the off-ramp. They just said that the traffic will be minimally impacted. So as we get closer to construction time, I'll have enough information to provide you.
They're going to connect it up to the east front road?
Yes.
That'll be interesting.
That's what we said.
Yeah, but there's also another entrance on 165, yeah. They'll keep that open.
Yeah, I know people exit that going there thinking they can get the McDonald's and stuff. And
yeah.
Like, where am I going?
Yeah.
Get it out, so
yeah. With that, I think that's all I have for today.
Well, can you touch on the broom track?
Yeah.
Oh!
Okay. Are you going to cover that one?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay, because Jim was going to do it, but he's going to take the
conference. Somebody, sorry.
So basically what happened, Clement, you can fill in if I got something wrong, but as Jim explained it to me, last summer we had a pretty significant accident, actually, where one of the broom trucks was rear-ended. Luckily, the guy wasn't hurt, but the tractor, the piece of equipment was completely totaled. We got about $37,000, I think, $30,000 from the insurance company. So we didn't replace it because that wasn't going to be enough to replace that vehicle. and then we waited to buy some of the trucks we had budgeted for this year, hoping that we'd have some money left from the purchase of those vehicles, which we did. And basically what this does is it's reallocating, it's in the same appropriation unit, so it doesn't require a resolution or anything, but it does require us to send a note to the finance committee to basically transfer within the appropriation unit this 40 grand or 37 and change to the 41, I see the actual list, but transfer so we can purchase a new broom tractor. The new broom is going to have some new features, though. The one we want, given some of what we've got to do, this is going to have wet and dry capabilities.
Correct.
The old one was dry.
It was just
dry. So this will be, it will help actually keep the dust down in some of the more urbanized areas where we're having to do some of this work now. But that's basically the whole deal.
So I'm glad that we've heard. That's a good thing. Obviously, what would have happened if you didn't have the money?
Yeah.
Like we need this.
We
maintain our standards, right?
Yep.
So then what? Would it come out of the surplus, or was that
we probably would have to either forego a piece of equipment that we had budgeted this year and make a decision as to which one is more important, whatever that other piece of equipment would be, if it was a small dump truck, one-ton dump truck or something like that, if we went with one less and allocated the money for this. Because I believe if it was that kind of a trade-off, we still would have taken the money from that and done an allocation, reallocation of the funds in order to accomplish this, because I believe this is something that we use a lot.
It's the only one that the county has.
Yes.
Is it the only one? I don't think it's the only one.
It's not the only one, but to do sweeping for like freeways and Highway 50, only that kind, that type of broom can handle that. I like the fact that you're asking that question, because generally that's how most of our, especially even our trucks, they're just like one truck away from. So right. it's really risky sometimes. Like,
yeah, this is the first time that this has happened. The broom on the front of the tractor about, it was 4 or 5 years ago.
On P, right?
On P, guy.
Yeah.
We got.
He was in the hospital because I went to visit that guy.
Darn lucky that day.
Yeah, we've got all the lights and the, signage behind with the arrows pointing people. And
that piece of equipment had its own flashing unit right on it.
And, of course, they're required to wear all the safety.
That's what saved this guy. And the other guy had all that stuff on, too. But he got whacked so bad. He was in the Burlington Hospital. I went to see him. He couldn't move.
That was on a tractor.
Yeah.
Was it bad weather or something?
No.
Sunny.
Sunny. Middle of the day.
I was working right down the road. It was between Reynolds Farm and Skinner. Right on that street, shot of B, right by Doug Kimball's.
Yeah.
What's the term? A distracted driving.
Yeah.
That's so.
Texting or something.
Right?
Well, regarding this type of equipment, is there any chance of sharing, like with Pleasant Prairie or other jurisdictions? Is there, if the need arose, is that something that could be done or not really?
We have not typically done with cities or village or town, but we've done with trade equipment and things with other counties, especially when we are working on DOT projects or DOT facilities.
So there's a couple of options. I mean, you have the money now, but if, let's say, all else fail, you could find the equipment somewhere in an emergency situation.
Or we could lease.
Or lease.
Yeah.
We have done that. We have leased.
And this one could not be repaired, is what you're saying?
Insurance company agreed. And we typically, internally, we do that, because years ago there was kind of the silo thing where parks had their stuff and facilities had their stuff. And now internally all that stuff gets shared, all those specialty pieces of equipment get shared. We haven't done it outside, probably more so from an accounting standpoint, I'm going to guess, to allocate costs and that kind of thing. It's something that could be looked at, though.
And I assume everyone who uses equipment is certified and qualified on each of the pieces of equipment that you're using in the different areas. Or do you just take a guy out of here or a woman out of here and tell them, go work over here for a little bit?
The guy has to be like our high ranger truck, our lift truck. There's guys in Mike's shop that are certified, but there's only a few. There's guys in Matt's shop that are certified, and then there's guys in Clement's shop.
And they go all through the same certification.
Right, that same training, yeah.
That's right.
Anything else for Clement?
Thank you very much, Clement. Move on to Mr.
Dow. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'll go through all of our current projects and give some updates and hopefully a little background information for our new committee members as well. So Bristol Town Hall used to be located within Bristol Woods Park, and we have worked for the last several years with the Bristol Wisconsin Historical Society, where they finally had enough funds to move that town hall onto the village property where it now sits. So you can see the attached pictures that actually made the Kenosha News front page, and understandably so, with closing down C&MB in order to move that thing was quite a circus, and a lot of people showed up for it. So that's good. They're well on their way to actually establishing that and revitalizing it for the community. Next thing we have is Kemper Center, a couple items, one being Lakefront Studios. This is a project being done by Kemper Center Inc., which is the not-for-profit arm that runs the day-to-day operations of a county-owned property in Kemper Center. So the third and fourth floors above Simmons Auditorium, if you're familiar with that specific location within Kemper. And it was an old dormitory for in a boarding school for a girls' school back until 1974. So it sat basically unused since 1974. And Kemper Center is now on the last leg of refinishing that. And just basically, they're keeping the current state pretty similar to what it was, but just updating the HVAC system, electrical upgrades, new doors, light fixtures, in order to make it for small business, artists, things like that, that can utilize those dormitories, and they can have more of a fixed income revenue in to help make Kemper Center more sustainable. The only thing that they have to do is we're working on some challenges for their sanitary sewer, so we're getting a second opinion on making sure that when you flush a toilet, it does what it's supposed to do. So, next thing that you probably saw in the Kenosha News as well is Kemper Center again got hit whenever you get a large northeastern storm. Those rocks truly do fly, and it's dangerous out there that you can get a 100-pound boulder that rolls at close to 100 yards into the Kemper Center in the open space. So on that storm on April 15th, it did push a lot of debris, and we had about 50 cubic yards that we already cleaned up and took out of there, and we did not put it back into Lake Michigan for it to fly out again, because it's only a matter of time if it would do that again. So the good news is, and this last week's newspaper, it was notified that we did receive a 50-50 match award through the Coastal Management Program, that's through the state, to go on to phase two of our design and engineering for that coastal repair. So we already worked with Barrett Engineers on phase one. Now we're moving into actual construction documents, and we'll be that much closer to having a long-term fix. Now, of course, the actual construction is going to be up there, but at least we're in the best position within the county, I believe, that we'll have a shovel-ready project when that opportunity comes available.
Dennis,
yeah.
How often does this occur?
Since I've been here, once a year.
Really?
Yeah.
So the long-term fix is going to prevent this from going
what on? Has happened in the past is they being maybe the county, maybe privately when this was owned, before the county has owned it, the way that they managed that shoreline was using literally industrial waste, being concrete fixed with rebar or whatever else they could get their hands on, the wrong size riprap potentially, just to try to fill in the spots. But nothing was ever specifically designed or engineered with what you see, those large granite boulders, you know, 6 ton or even heavier than that. So this, working with Baird, would have those long-term repairs to do more of a toe revetment and then a steel sheet pile wall that would go in back of there to reinforce and stabilize that whole entire corridor.
Okay. So the debris that was coming up was just the stuff that was dumped there in the past?
All in the years past, yeah.
But some of it's asphalt.
That's right.
It's always asphalt.
Yeah.
It's torn out our whole walking path there. Between the city of Kenosha, all the way up to Carthage and all the way down to the prairie, they're talking hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
and it's all being engineered and everybody's trying. But I think the city alone is over a couple hundred million, right?
Right.
I believe it's that.
Needs to be done.
And we joke, you know, that the 50-year events happen about every 6 weeks now, it seems. And so some of these things, the lakes had historic highs. Now, 20 years ago, it was at historic lows, right? So it's not a good spot right now. And these windstorms, when they come, if it had happened probably 10 years ago, it wouldn't have half the results because the lake is up as high as it is right now. So it's an issue. And, given the whole coast, some of this stuff. And then, I don't know if you followed, just north of Milwaukee in Mequon by Carroll College, they hardened there. They got engineering and they hardened because they were in danger of losing some of their buildings. So they hardened it. Well, now, just down from them, the folks that are losing their houses claim that what Carroll did to harden their beach created the erosion, accelerated it on theirs, and there's all kinds of lawsuits and stuff going. So it has to really be done holistically in order to, and it's hard to wrap your head around because the dollars are frightening.
Yeah.
So just, yeah, interesting.
Maybe humans weren't meant to be that close to the pond.
Right?
Good point. So that covers that item. Next one is KD Park Phase 2 development. So Phase 1 consisted of actually constructing a parkway. Before it was just a gravel drive when we acquired KD within the two different acquisitions of County Highway KD. So this is Phase 2 that's going to optimize our existing parking lot and expand 6 separate trailer stalls, put in a boarding pier, multi-purpose pier, the trailer parking, an actual boat launch to go with that, ADA pathway to match and adjoin from the parking lot to a restroom facility, and also from the restroom facility down to the boarding pier, and a multi-purpose pier that's going to accommodate an ADA accessible canoe kayak launch that has rollers to easily roll in and out of the lake because it's a non-motorized petroleum based lake. So you can have like a trolling motor that's electric, but no petroleum based motors can go in there. But also that the pier will also accommodate scuba diving and fishing. So we received a 50-50 grant match for all those items through the state stewardship. So we're moving forward to develop the design engineering documents, and we anticipate bid projects in June and construction for September, and hopefully we'll be done with this in late September of this year, except for the restroom. That one's going to be a little bit more intricate, and we want to take our time with that one. So we're still working on conceptual items for the restroom, and that one just might lag a little bit more.
Not as intricate as you may think, because I had a conceptual idea that I threw out to Ray the other day at our pre-meeting meeting, and talked to the person working on the concept, and he said, "Dennis, I don't normally tell people that are clients that they have a crazy idea." He said, "But that's what I have to tell you." So,
because I just told him about it today.
he said, "I'll put that out to the guy working on it." He said, "But I said, fine." I said, "It was just a thought."
I'm going to see him tomorrow, so I'm sure we'll go back and forth and talk about that a little
bit. Tell him it was a donut shop.
Donut shop.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the, I did mention the Bucks Arena. I know the architect, and so I had done some work for him recently, and I just called him. I said, "Hey, look into the idea of the curved roofline," because I saw a tire shop, a donut shop, and so we were thinking of, not quite Frank Lloyd Wright, but the way the prairie is set up out there. I said, "Just ask him that," you know. And so he told me. He said, "Hey."
Well, we'll definitely give you an update after tomorrow. See if it's feasible.
We can drop that.
Okay. Or we could do that. So that's the updates. So more to come on KD Park development. Fox River Park. Happy to report that we are basically done with the renovations and improvements. So that's been about a year and a half side project, I'll call that, for our internal staff. And it's really been a grassroots community-driven project as well. That in Fox River Park, there's a facility that actually originated with the Civilian Conservation Corps when that park was developed in 1927. and it had its intent and purpose then, and it kind of went through this phase of a useful life, and it went from that to a park superintendent house to the West End Park offices. But after acquiring KD Park in 2001, it kind of just sat with no purpose, and no one could really figure out what to do, and it was actually going to be demoed just because it's just an asset that has no value to it. So we figured out that we can just do minor repairs, and we actually had a bunch of Eagle Scouts that stepped up to the plate, and we were able to do projects to convert this over to an overnight lodge for Scout and Civic groups. So now we have people that can come and bust out from the city that don't get to experience the county and have opportunity to stay overnight. And there's a brand new fire pit. They got bunk beds that can house 18 youth plus a separate room for the adult chaperones. So this is just another useful life of a county facility, and it truly didn't cost the taxpayers that much money, that it all came from the community, Eagle Scouts, and then even Wilmont Ski Resort through Vail. They had over 50 volunteers work on that facility for a day too. So we're going to work on a press release and send it out for a grand opening ribbon cutting. So we're just trying to figure out a date for that one in the near future. Another bonus is a new playground. Speaking of history, there's probably hasn't been a playground since 1937 that's been constructed within Fox River Park. So we're well overdue for a brand new playground. Site excavation is complete, and the contractors are on site currently. So we're hoping to actually pour the foundations and the forms tomorrow before we get storms on Wednesday. So they're going to be here until that project's done. So that one will move quickly through this next month. Next project we have is the Pike River Restoration Phase 1. That's been a fairly large-scale project. We've been working on that for the last 2 years, and recently we received funds through grants through the EPA. We received $500,000 from the EPA. Also, Fund for Lake Michigan awarded us $200,000 with a $100,000 county match to revitalize phase one. So it's a three-phase project, but we're focusing on phase one for the river restoration from basically where the boardwalk is just north of County Highway A and our property line. It's basically the Pike River has a little fork in the river. So you're starting on the north end and you're gonna come into the park, cross one land and stone bridge, and then the second bridge where the dam was removed, that's where phase one ends. So we're gonna be regrading, restoring the banks, getting rid of some severe erosion issues by doing minor grade work, and then doing more for the toe revetment in some places that need it where it's truly needed. But in other spots, we're actually doing more native planting and growth within there too. So bids did come back today. We're still vetting those. So more to be told on the project, but we still anticipate to start in the beginning of June this year. So that'll be a fun project, and it's going to make the park look a lot different for the better once you open that up.
Make sure it's not plants that are banned in certain states. If you read the commercial news,
I did not.
Yeah. The pear trees down.
Pear trees. Oh, yeah. Down. Yeah, we did talk about that.
I know the people that planted those pear trees, they're not banned anywhere.
Really?
Yeah. Well, they said in Illinois they are.
I
find
know.
That hard to believe. It's a nice tree.
Pardon?
It's a nice tree.
I believe it was a Cleveland Select pear.
Yeah, it's a
they're not nice banned
tree.
Anywhere.
No.
I didn't know trees could be banned.
You listed three things about that.
Sure, you can.
Totally
banned Camelash, I know.
No. That's not banned. If you're a nut, you can plant that. Yes, certain things are buckthorn. That's banned.
No, okay, so what makes a tree
invasive?
Oh, okay.
So according to this architect that apparently has a bone to pick with the city of Kenosha,
yeah.
that there was a bad tree. I read that article, and they couldn't get a hold of anybody. Well, if they would have called the people that planted them, they'd tell you Cleveland Select Pear is not. It's very expensive, and it lives a long time, and it's a beautiful tree, so... I read that article and I thought, damn, this person that wrote this didn't do their work. You know, but just make sure no buckthorn.
No, there's no buckthorn.
Otherwise, we've got to hire those colts again.
But plenty of honeysuckle.
Yeah.
So, also with that project and the bid are the grant requirements. We do have a public information session that'll be hosted at PETS on the 22nd. So that's going to be open to the general public. So it's a very extensive project, and Petrifying Springs has about 1 million people that visit that park on an annual basis. So it might be kind of like a shock and awe thing when you see that work starting. So we want to try to be proactive wherever possible and truly talk about the benefits of why we're doing it before you just see all the contractors show up. So I think that'll be a benefit to whoever's interested, be a part of that. Next, PETS parking lot expansion. So the contract was awarded to Pablocki Paving. That's right on the next page. We do have a pre-construction meeting set for 5/8, so that's tomorrow. And this project is going to be done with by July 1st. So this is the only parking lot that was not done with our original Petrifying Springs Parkway and parking lot restoration. That was how many years ago? So this one's in desperate need of repair. And we're taking that opportunity to also expand. There's some green space that's underutilized. So doubling our footprint for the opportunity to create more parking stalls up on the top end of JR for that parking lot. Next PETS project is Wi-Fi and security cameras. That work is underway. We completed the underground boring underneath the river, any roadways, so we don't have to trench through any paved surfaces, and we avoid obviously going under the river with anything else with trenching. So we anticipate completing that project in June, and that will basically make Wi-Fi available to all of our customers in every one of our pavilion areas as well. Next is the chairperson said about our roof replacements. We're hitting that one hard in the parks again for a second year. Kyshak, they plan on starting shortly with the PETS roof replacement. So they'll be doing that in between our rentals. That'll only be a couple day project. And then move on from there to Silver Lake for a couple more roofs. And then we also have Kemper Center. That'll most likely happen later in fall with 14 maintenance projects and 6 roof replacement ones. Next we have Silver Lake Park, Shelter B. We had put a letter to finance together in our previous committee, so that project is moving forward. They did drill, and we just have to make the final lateral and electrical connections and put the pump in place, test the water, make sure that it comes back good. And then that one should be done this month as well. And then as we hinted towards our fee booth project, Mike and Mike the electrician have been doing a fantastic job installing new solar panels onto our fee booth. We did kind of an analysis of how we can best electrify and bring a credit card system into our fee booth, because right now it's all cash transactions from Memorial Day to Labor Day for entry fees to Silver Lake Beach. So the solar panel will be able to energize our fee booth and have a POS system in order for us to be more customer oriented. So not only is it a benefit for our customers, but it's actually it's more economical to go this route versus even We Energies. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was definitely worth our while to go solar versus We Energies with that project. So it was definitely a win-win. So a couple pictures on that as well. Another grants award through KD Park, Prairie Restoration. If you remember, if you're part of the county board, we put together a resolution to apply for prairie funding for a DNR grant. And I was talking to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service about restoring about approximately 30 acres of prairie. And they said, oh, well, we got 15 grand that we can throw towards the project. So they recently awarded us 15 grand to be a partial match to go towards the KD 30-acre prairie restoration on the western side of that park. So that was good news for us this last month. Summer programs. We have a new program called Tinker Garden. It's kind of ironic, kind of with the beer garden in a way, but I don't think that they were talking to each other when they came up with that name. But it's a youth recreation program. That it's a private program that comes in and offers and administers education-based program for youth around ages 3 to 5 with their parents.
I see a partnership.
Yeah, there we go. Keep the parents preoccupied, maybe.
Well, I'll tell you, the library, community library has the same type of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that might be something that they could piggyback off of, or have you guys piggyback off of to each other.
We have been opening up lines within the library, and we're actually going to be doing a collaboration with our movie night in the parks coming up, and they have Comic-Con coming in this year, and so we're going to show a Marvel movie. They get to set up a booth at our movie night and try to collaborate. That's going to be adjacent to our beer garden within Petrifying Springs Park. So, yeah, absolutely.
And adults.
Then our next summer program is Tots in the Park, and this is our second year doing this. Last year was with Hawthorne Hollow. This year we are partnering with the Pringle Nature Center. Here's a flyer for you as well. This is good for Pringle Nature Center to try to attract people on the eastern side of the interstate to know what they do and how well they do it. So they're offering this at a pretty economical rate for, it's $5 per session. Or if you sign up for all sessions, then there's a discounted rate on that flyer as well. A couple upcoming events. Free admission to the Kenosha County Dog Parks for that one day, so you can see that on the attached flyer. And then a soft opening. I don't know how much that means to the general public, because I'm sure they'll be there if weather's good, is this coming Friday. It's going to be open on weekends up until Memorial Day weekend on that Friday of Memorial Day weekend. Then they'll be open daily for the remainder of the season. And that is all I have. At Pets, correct.
Thank you, Matt. So before we move on to Ray, just because we were talking about Kemper Center at the beginning, I just wanted to mention to the committee, there's a chance, if you're on this committee, there's a persona that was created by someone, quite a few of us know who it is now. The name is Rita Franco. And she actually, or they had letters to the editor published in the Kenosha News a couple of times until they were informed that there is no such person as Rita Franco. And you have to actually do an address and things, and it was just Rita Franco. So her or their normal target is the Kemper Center. So if you're on this committee, you could get requests for information. And they were gone for a while. This Rita was gone for a while, but it popped up last week after our meeting. Had a request for Chairman Esposito and Jim Cruiser for information. And Jim had been informed, and it had been investigated, that this was not a real person. I was advised you don't have to give them information. I did know. I certainly had no information. But the Kenosha News now won't publish this person's letters. But you could get a request or an email. They could get your email. Now, the other day, I responded because I like jacking around with this person. And I responded, and then I saw where all 23 of us got, her supposed letter back to Dan Esposito. So, just so you know, Rita Franco is not a person. I mean, it is a person, but it's not a Franco. It's fictitious. It's a perception.
So it's not Supervisor Franco's wife.
That's what I thought. When I got my first request, I thought, well, Jesus.
What's wrong with his wife?
It's not like John's family. No. But their normal target.
Jennifer, last thing I checked, no need.
Their normal target has been the Kemper Center. So being on this committee, you could get requests. Yeah. But I mean, you can check with Joe Cardamone. The Corporation Council is the guy that told me you don't have to respond to that. Because they did a background on it and a reverse phone number thing. Because we have a guy that used to work for the Kenosha News that now works for the county, Joe Patani. Right. And he said, well, no, that's not who that person is. So anyway, I just want to make sure everybody knew that so you don't have to panic if you get these requests.
Where is the emails coming from? They have some sort of bogus or some sort of
thing. I guess a person could check it out, but it hasn't been something that's been, like, threatening. So
no. It's just annoyance more than anything else.
it's an annoyance. And but now the Kenosha News won't publish your letter. You know, so because they don't. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I just have one question for Matt. Do we have a park and open space plan?
2035. Yes.
2035. And do we do anything every 5 years, like a park comprehensive plan?
We don't do a park comprehensive plan. We usually, when we generate grants, we usually indicate the 2035 plan.
Okay.
And that's how we're able, because the DNR mandate that we have some comprehensive plan, and that's what we refer to.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So now, we're going to
move on to Ray. Yeah, just a few things to wrap up. The Brookside project, we're considering substantially complete because next week, I think everybody's aware that on the 15th, which is Tuesday, 3 in the afternoon, we're going to have a ribbon cutting. There's a few punch list items that we're working on. The wireless component of the nurse call system is something we're working on. I'm hoping with the two meetings we've got scheduled in the next couple days, we're going to make some major headway on that. It's a newer technology, and I think that it's proven because it's in use all over the state, but I think a combination of the way we launched it and the way the company, some of their applications folks, it was a little bumpier than it should have been, and it's not quite where it needs to be. And I'm confident that we'll get it. That's really the last major issue we've got. We've gotten all, pretty much all of the HVAC issues resolved that are typical in a large project like this. We had some interesting plumbing issues that popped up a few weeks after we moved back into the renovated space. But we were able to, I think, combination of some of the things we did in anticipation of some stuff going awry because it sat for a year while all the work was taking place. We had done some things to try to head things off at the pass. It didn't quite head them off, but I think minimized the damage. And basically, we were having some issues with hot water. And there was a number of technical things. We had, at one point, five master plumbers from Lee Plumbing out there all scratching their heads. But we got a few other engineering folks involved, and within a couple days, we got it all sorted out. So pretty much everything's been resolved. The building's working as designed. This week, we're going to do just a light skim coat. If everybody remembers, that parking lot was in rough shape before the project on the east side of the building, the original parking lot. It got worse as we parked construction equipment and so forth on that parking lot. All we did, we're doing is some minor grinding and just putting about an inch of coating on it, blacktop, in the next 2 days, just to get us safe for this year, because the plan is to take all that out next year, address the issue of the entrance into Brookside. If anyone's ever come from the west on Washington Road and had to make a U-turn in the crossover that can accommodate if you've got a Yugo or maybe a smart car, but if you're driving a regular size vehicle, your front and your tail are hanging out into both lanes of traffic there. That's all going to be changed around. So we want to make that safe, so whether you're 50-something or 80-something going to visit somebody, you can safely get in and out of Brookside and create more parking that's going to be up close to the facility, so that most of the folks that come there to visit, a lot of them have ambulatory issues, and there was only a handful of spots close, and then you have to navigate over this really bumpy parking lot to get safely into the building. We're going to change all that, so that'll be the last piece of the puzzle in 2019. We're actually designing that parking lot in-house. Clement and one of our junior engineers is actually working on it. It'll be a nice little project because it'll address all of the issues that have kind of plagued that parking lot for, well, since it was put in 95. So that's gonna happen next year. That's pretty much it at Brookside. Department-wise, yeah, now that the weather is finally broken, everybody is rushing to make up ground. As you heard from Dan and Gulf, they've got stuff going on. Mike's got projects. Frank's got projects. Matt's got a plate full of projects. Clement. And everybody's hitting the ground running. So I expect it to be a real busy, productive summer season. And we're off to a good, delayed, but good start. So that's pretty much it from my end.
Yes, Ben?
Are we going to be in preview?
July
this year. Yeah.
Oh, okay. We have had to pass the Pringle Nature Center for a meeting.
We've had that one meeting there. I believe the 15th, don't I, everybody forget the 15th is the ribbon cutting at the Brookside.
Oh, yeah.
and I'd still like to. It's hard to coordinate schedules, but I'd still like to, if it made sense, maybe before a county board meeting, to set something up, because we did finish a lot of projects early this year, late last year, between the public safety building, the fleet maintenance building, the detention storage building, Brookside you'll see next week. There was a lot of things that got accomplished that have really enhanced, I think, productivity and operational efficiencies between the medical examiner, the way the detectives are now all in one area upstairs for the sheriff's department, the EOC, compared to what, if any of you have been, I know Supervisor Wambold has been, but other folks have been in the old EOC. It was literally located in the basement. It was designed when Zion Nuclear Plant was in business, so it was designed with that intent. So to get there and to function there was a completely different mindset from a design standpoint. Now we've got all these collaborative things that take place regularly for events, and it's the new system, the new center is designed to accommodate those things, and it really turned out.
Well, I want to see if somebody that was in there told me it's like being in an episode of 24.
There's nothing. If you go like to Madison's, which I'm not saying they don't need it because it's Dane County, ours is, I think if you had most people guess at what we've got in the AV systems, they'd probably be off by a factor or two.
Yeah.
Because we really did a good job of speccing out the systems. And literally, with 5 minutes of explanation, somebody can sit down at that laptop and run whatever program you want to run. A lot of other places, you got to have somebody from the IT department come up and actually run your event for you. So if you don't have the IT guy there, you're not going to get much done. I've been to three things up there now, and every one of them, there were people from the outside that sat down and were running their program and using all the screens, all the AV stuff, just the way it was. And it's being used. He's down there pretty regularly. 3 to 4 days a week, there's stuff going on in that EOC. It's because we designed it to be used, not just be used for an event because it's an expensive room. The police are using it for training. The sheriff's department's using it for training. County fire guys have been down there for training. It's really being used.
I would like people, this committee, to see the fleet maintenance building too. Because there was a group of us that really supported buying this land near the downtown campus. It goes back to Frank Volpin, Tessa, and Bernie Bash. Some of the meetings we had, and this has paid off amazingly, buying a couple of those old buildings. And this is a perfect example.
Yeah, we were originally thinking when we got that building, because we got it, it wasn't a tax deed, but it was a minimal price. I don't think we paid six figures. It was either, high five figures or very low, $100,000 for that building. And we were originally going to demo it just to clean off that block of property. And then this came up with the medical examiner, and we were trying to shoehorn them into the basement because we wanted to get the medical examiner's whole operation into the PSB. And the architect said, well, boy, wouldn't it be neat if we could get the fleet maintenance operation out of here? Because does the fleet maintenance in that building, again, you knew, but there's a jail above it. So there's all the plumbing and infrastructure for the jail is right there. So your ability to lift a sedan car is limited. But when it was constructed in 82, there was no SUVs being used by the cops or the deputies. Now that's the majority of the fleet. So now you get one of those with the higher roof line. You get them about this high off the ground to do any work. And that's how the fleet maintenance operation was. And then I think Pat, the guy that runs it, his requirement is you had to be 6'4 to work in his department, because most of all those guys, I'm joking, but most of those guys are real tall. So they're sitting literally on like office chairs to roll underneath to do even like an oil change or check out the minorest of repair. Now we took this old building, and it was an old woodworking building, rough shape, really rough shape, gutted it, restored it structurally. We put enough money in it. We didn't go nuts because we wanted to make sure it had at least a 15-year life, because that's about when your major systems start to go anyways. So we put a 15-year life as a target, because we don't know what that block is ultimately going to be used for by us 15 years from now. But in the meantime, we've got a building that cost us, I think, $1.5 million to do. If we get 10 years or 15 out of it, the cost per year is virtually nil. In the meantime, he's able to work on squads. raise them up as high as he wants them. He's got double the number of functional, or maybe triple the number of functional bays that he has. He's got storage in-house. He's got an alignment machine, a four-wheel alignment machine, so he doesn't have to send those out anymore. It's really impressive.
And it serves the city and the county.
It serves the city and the county. It's really a good, it was a good investment. So, yeah, so we'll talk, and then maybe we'll try to get something set up before one of the county board meetings.
I know it's hard to do with him before a county board meeting. We could. It's right across the street.
How long is the Brookside event going to be on Wednesday?
I'm guessing that's going to be probably
Tuesday.
It'll be probably, you know, guests and so forth. There'll probably be a half hour of people saying stuff, and then it'll probably be, Fran usually has, you know, a cake or some something, a little munch on.
I'm at work, unfortunately, 3 o'clock.
I think it'll go close to 5 for sure.
Oh, really?
I think it'll go to 5. Yeah, I don't
know. I thought it was Tuesday. It's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday the 15th. Yeah.
Oh, we got a meeting that time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's,
we got a 7:30 meeting.
Yeah, so.
That's not going to work for a lot of people. And if that thing was that fast, that would work.
Yeah.
Anything else for Ray? If not, I'll ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Franco. Second by Supervisor. You have all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone.